John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And it's great to be joined by Sean Salisbury. And so, Sean, lots going on. And I don't know, are you surprised? We're up to, tomorrow's going to be the closing time for opt-outs, at least for this season. I mean, again, if you have special high-risk type of things in the season or after tomorrow, you can still opt out and be able to, you know, not have to pay it on your own. You're still able to take care of. But for the most part, the opt-outs. Are you surprised there's been so many? Because at the current count, I mean, there's been 58. And there's been, you know, 8 with the New England Patriots, 2 wide receivers with the Miami Dolphins. You know, there could be Ladarius White with the with Buffalo joining Star Lutolele. You get C.J. Mosley. He's out. I mean, in the AFC East. Are you surprised there's this many?
You know, John, I'm not. I actually don't think we're done. Now, I know for financial purposes and the rest of it, but depending on what goes on the rest of camp and what they see from other sports or what's going on in society, people are on social media all the time, whether it's scientific fact or some expert talking about medical. Sometimes you'll see something, they'll say, oh my gosh, this is true. And somebody may think, well, my wife just got pregnant or a weekend, whatever. I don't think we're done. I don't. I think this is something, whether you think on the side that this is overdone or whether we think on the side that more should do it. And I don't, you know, hold anybody. I mean, if they don't want to do it, I understand their concerns. I probably think different. I'd play and would deal with it and go for it, but I don't ever judge anybody for not. So no, I'm not surprised. And while we've had some starters, if it's ever a star, I'm talking about like Russ Wilson or Brady or Patrick Mahomes, if one of those guys were to opt out, it's sad, but it's true. The NFL and fans would look at it different. They just would. And while everybody's as important, life's just as important or how they feel, but we look, it's just like if the Yankees were the St. Louis Cardinals or the Dodgers or the Yankees were the Miami Marlins, baseball would not be playing. So they're going to have to make that decision. And then we get to the point real quick, John, what if we get one positive test in college or NFL 4 days before a game starts? Are we shutting down the entire, are we not going to play football that weekend? Are we going to go with baseball on another bye week? Oh, we got to cancel this game. What's going to be that in protocol? 4 dudes on one team and nobody on the other or 6. So I'm not shocked by it, John. I think there's enough info for people to decide. At least we don't know the disease, but enough info to say, you know what, I don't want to put my family in danger, or I do. I don't think we're done. It doesn't surprise me. And looking at baseball, I think some of the players are saying, we're in a worse situation because we can't social distance. I don't think it's done. The key is about stopping down or continuing. Will there be a star involved when it comes to, oh my gosh, star, that kind of guy?
Yeah, of course. I'm not surprised. I don't begrudge anybody that decides, you know what, it's
Agreed.
Not worth it. I'm in their corner. It's their decision, and we'll see how it goes. But let's go with 4 downs.
First down, which was the bigger surprise on the NFL Top 100 list? Russell Wilson ranking ahead of Pat Mahomes or Lamar Jackson being ranked number 1 overall?
Both. But Russ is closer to Mahomes than Lamar Jackson is to the number 1 slot. Period. Now, if you're telling me judge on one season that because he was the MVP, and he had a hell of a season, did Lamar Jackson, is going to be a hell of a player, especially if his passing continues to improve. John Harbaugh, as coach said, we want him to be able to beat press man and 8 in the box more, where they challenge him throwing the football. And that's the next level. Lamar Jackson, great football player. There's no question about it. And a dual threat danger. He's phenomenal. But he's not the best football player in the league, let alone a top 4 quarterback in the league. I can think a guy. If you said, Sean, for the next 5 years, pick who the better football player is, Lamar Jackson or Deshaun Watson, it's not even close. In my mind, I'd take Deshaun Watson in a heartbeat. Forget the numbers. I'm just talking about overall leadership of the team. Hell, 3 years from now, Kyler Murray may be better. And I love Lamar Jackson. Mahomes is the best football player in the NFL, and he's the best quarterback. And number 2 is Russ, and Aaron Donald would be number 3 in my mind. So Russ, with his track record and what he's done in Super Bowl and his potential and his production, he's closer to Mahomes, even though Mahomes should be in front. Mahomes should be 1. Then Lamar Jackson. I have Lamar Jackson top 10 for sure. I can make an argument that he's not the top 5 player, and he's not a top 3 or 4 quarterback. So I don't know what the players were thinking now, whether it's favoritism or they just are going by one season. But overall, while Lamar's spectacular, Mahomes, and there's not one that John Harbaugh would take Mahomes over Lamar Jackson, and he's his own quarterback. It's Mahomes and it's Russ top two, and then the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 slot. You can argue where Lamar fits, but it's not ahead of 1 and 2.
No, and I agree 100% in that, because certainly, you know, because I definitely have Deshaun Watson over Jackson, and you'd have to put Aaron Rodgers over Jackson and maybe Drew Brees over Jackson. Hey, he had a great year last year. He was the MVP, but he's not the best player in football.
Second down. Earlier this morning, UConn decided they would sit out the 2020 college football season. Do you think that decision will lead to other schools doing the same?
I think it was only a matter of time, and I do. Now, I don't know the size of the school. You know, there's a lot of power. The Power Five, I mean, from everything that's gone on in the Pac-12 with these players demanding, which they're not going to get. They'll be lucky to get. Some of those things were already in, and I'm a Pac-12 guy. You guys are in Pac-12 country. Some of those things, the demands are absolutely absurd and ridiculous, but some are already in motion, the likeness and all that. So when it comes to the UConn football team, it would be a lot. There'd be more following suit if it was Clemson. While UConn is a good program, coached by Randy Edsall, it's a good coach. That's not as impactful as if it was, and I hate to say it, or Michigan or Ohio State. So it looks like they're trying to go forward with the season. But we got one conference, got nine conferences, and ACC's playing 10+1. Somebody's going to decide along the way. Hopefully, there won't be a breakout that they don't want to join in this. Now, I don't know if that's a Power Five school, or if it's a powerhouse school, or if it's a school that just says we can't do this. But I don't think we're done with that either. But the key is if it starts to go in two big schools from a big conference. But UConn may end up being the biggest, but I still think we got a lot of questions of not only just starting a college football season, but how the hell they're going to finish it with the protocol of canceling games if somebody gets it. So I'm not surprised that UConn did it. I don't blame them. But I also know that it's probably not the last school, definitely not the last players that opt out for the NFL draft.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if a school in like the Big 12, maybe a school right. in the Big 10. I think it's going to be solid on the SEC. It's going to be solid on the ACC. I think that you're not going to see, you know, a Pac-12 school pull out. But I think right now there may be some weakness in the Big 12 and also the Big 10.
Third down, which quarterback has a better shot at a comeback season in 2020, Big Ben Roethlisberger or Cam Newton?
Well, to me, you go with the guy who's going to put up the bigger numbers throwing the football on the better team. That's Ben Roethlisberger. Ben can throw for 4,000 yards in his sleep. If Ben Roethlisberger is healthy and in shape, and the Steelers are back as a team and healthy in their defense, which is going to be improved, gets him the ball, and he plays 16 games, he'll be in the Offensive Player of the Year talk. I'm just telling you, he will. He's a numbers machine, and they are going to throw it, and he is going to put numbers on the board. That's a key. With Cam, it's different. They'll run it. They'll mix in the run. I think both of them will have good seasons, and I think the Patriots are on the cusp, depending on these eight guys opting out. The Steelers are a better team, and Ben's a better quarterback throwing the football right now. So condition, mental state, but as far as their approach to the game, Cam's in a new system. Ben's in one he understands. Ben's got the advantage, especially with no offseason. Cam's a better, you know, all-around player. Ben's a better passer. And we judge quarterbacks by comeback player of the years by their numbers. Ben will put up bigger numbers.
Yeah, I agree. Because, again, I mean, he goes into the season. Now, maybe he's deluding himself, but they go in offensively thinking they can score 30 points. They haven't done it in the last couple of years, but they couldn't do it. But, no, I think the numbers go to Ben. And now that Ben seems to be healthy, I think that's all going to work out.
Earlier this week, the XFL sold to a group led by The Rock. So, should that league give it another go in 2021?
I don't know how soon it'll give it a go. I think it's going to be difficult coming out of a pandemic to do it in 2021. I personally think if they're going to do it, you got to shoot for the following year because, hell, we may have some spring college football. We don't know what's going to go on if a season's canceled. Baseball, we're trying to get fans back in the stands. So now's not the time. You want to buy it it was bought high by Vince McMahon. It is sold low, and they bought it low. So it's a good start, but it can't happen next spring. There's not enough time with a pandemic getting workouts, but look for later. But here I still, even though it's The Rock, and he's a great marketer, John, and they've got big money behind it. Vince McMahon's a great marketer with big money, and the pandemic jumped in there. I still think until the NFL's involved with a minor league system, that it's going to be very, very difficult for a spring football league to survive and make money. It all sounds good, and it's The Rock, but I wouldn't count on it killing it in the ratings, and it's not going to be back in 2021 at a later date, maybe.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that you need to sit out, because now they're going to be competing a little bit about college football, basketball. They're going to be competing against college basketball. You know, all these different things are going to be there. And, you know, sure, they can get the TV contracts, but will they be able to get fans in the stands? I think it's better to kind of wait. And then can they get enough players? Because, again, you don't know how much damage there's going to be this season to the players. So I think it's more 2022 than it is 2021. But it's always great to have Four Downs with Sean Salisbury. And so, Sean, looking forward to being with you on Friday.
Yeah, great stuff, John. Always good to be with you, too. Talk to you.
All right, sounds good. And, of course, listen to the show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we get out the report card. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the report card with the professor.
And the report card we get out every day, we look at the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, what people say, what people do. We took the stories, we take the anecdotes, we take the social media comments and the voices, and we attach a grade to it. And, of course, lots to look at right now, so let's get right into it, Curtis.
John, let's get going. Yeah, Shohei Ohtani, Angels star hitter, sometimes pitcher, he and the Angels, they're in town this week for their series against the Mariners. And Angels manager yesterday, Joe Maddon, broke the news that he does not expect Shohei Ohtani to pitch again this season. Ohtani was diagnosed with a grade 1 and 2 strain of the flexor pronator mass. I don't quite know what that does. But he was unable to break 90 miles an hour during his last pitching outing. He also had an outing earlier in the season where he didn't retire six batters, the only six batters that he faced in a game, and he didn't pitch at all in the 2019 season as he was recovering from Tommy John surgery. John, how are we grading the continued attempts to make Shohei Ohtani a two-way pitcher or two-way player?
Yeah, I mean, we have to give it a C because they keep trying to do it and he keeps setting itself back. So maybe it comes down to, it's like, hey, listen, the more you try it, the worse it gets. And so, you know, if he's just going to be a hitter, that's fine. It's nice to be able to be versatile, try to do everything. But if you get more injuries, you're going to be wasting the talent. So I'm going to give it a C.
Yeah, I'm thinking right now the Angels are seriously considering converting Ohtani into a strict batter only, because it's been 2 years since he was an effective pitcher. His velocity down about 10 miles an hour over the last couple of years as he's recovering from Tommy John surgery. It used to hit triple digits. Now he's sitting at about 90, 89 miles an hour. That's going to be tough for anybody. I'm not too hopeful that Ohtani is going to become a top flight pitcher. He's a great hitter, is a great hitter, and Mariners know all about that. But yeah, Shohei Ohtani not looking so good on
the
mound.
Time to move on. I think so.
John, speaking of baseball oddities, did you see this yesterday between the Minnesota Twins and Pittsburgh Pirates? They had a delay in their game. It's an outdoor stadium. That's natural, but it was a delay because somebody was flying their personal drone over the stadium. Here's some play-by-play of that.
People that you want to go into battle with later.
Hold on a second. They pulled the Twins off the field because there is a drone over the field. FAA is not going to be too happy about this. So the umpires identified it, said, we got a player safety issue here, and they pulled the teams off for 2020. You can just go away already.
It's you can't expect anything like that to happen, John. It was a little tiny drone. It wasn't anything massive, but still could get in the way of a fly ball, something like that. How are we grading the first ever drone delay in Major League history?
We'll give it an F. It's like so much in baseball right now. It's like, again, how can you allow that to happen? I mean, it's like, they can't control the Marlins. They can't control the Cardinals. And now you can't control the fans with drones. It's like, give me a break. That is a solid F.
Yeah, I'm giving whoever flew that drone over Target Field in Minneapolis a good solid F on that one, because you just, you're not doing anything cool. It's Tom Wassel raised this point yesterday. It's like going to a concert and someone's brought a laser pointer. Like, you're not cool for doing that. No. I'm sorry, but you're never going to be the coolest guy in the room if you're the one interfering with everybody. And that's what that was. And it's annoying. It's certainly unique. I've never seen that happen in any sport before. But yeah, you just don't be flying your drones over baseball fields right now, folks. I know we all want to be in the stadium and get a nice view, and those drones are always equipped with cameras, but you know what? You get a better picture watching it on your TV.
Well, so, plus the drones didn't wear any masks.
So no, exactly. So obviously they couldn't be allowed in.
No, no.
And if you've got an idea of flying it over T-Mobile Park tonight, don't you dare. Stop that. Anybody out there listening, don't you dare. And then finally, or not finally, John, let's keep it going. Jalen Ramsey, he had himself quite the Zoom conference yesterday. He was asked plenty about his contract to the point where he got very fed up and stormed out.
Well, I said my agent in the front office, they're going to handle it. I'm worried about what I can worry about. I'm controlling what I can control. I answered the question. I'm not going to continue answering it just because I'm not answering it the way that y'all want me to. Either accept the answer or keep it pushing. I don't want to get disrespectful, but that's the answer. Appreciate it.
Wait a minute.
Billy?
Yeah, that was about 4 minutes in. I like Lindsay Theory there at the end, friend of the show, where Rams reporter for ESPN.com with it. Really? So, Jalen Ramsey storming out of his Zoom conference because he was tired of answering questions about his contract status. How are we grading Jalen Ramsey, John?
Give him a D-. I mean, again, you can say that you keep asking, but what do you think people want to know? It's like, are you going to sign or not going to sign? How's the deal going to go? It's like you wanted to trade, and so you use the media to be able to do that. You use social media to be able to do it, and now it's like, okay, you got what you wanted. You got the trade, and now what about the money? And if you're going to be updating things, what are you trying to do? So I'm going to give him a D-.
I'll give him an F. It's just these are easy questions. No one is trying to goad you. No one's trying to catch you in a moment where you're going to slip up, Jalen. They just want to know these answers. Just answer the question. John, what's the craziest press conference you've ever been a part of?
Well, I mean, I still go back to the Super Bowl days, standing on the field, and you had Hollywood Henderson, saying that, you can't. Is like Terry Bradshaw is so dumb he can't spell cat if you spotted him a K. And that one was pretty good. I mean, certainly the Marshawn Lynch one was just wild. When it's like here to avoid the fines and all those different things. That was kind of bizarre.
Were you in attendance for Denny Green's They Are Who We Thought They Were?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I was. And I was also in attendance for Jim Mora talking about playoffs. Playoffs. It's like I was at both of those. So, yeah, I've seen some pretty wild ones.
Yeah, God.
Playoffs?
Like that, right there, Jim Mora. And then finally, John, on the report card today, John Lynch, he had a Zoom conference. It went better than Jalen Ramsey's. He didn't storm off or anything like that. He was asked about Seattle and the price they paid to give up or to go get Jamal Adams, because 49ers were also involved in a lot of the rumors with Jamal Adams. Here is what John Lynch had to say about the price Seattle had to pay.
You know, with Jamal Adams, you saw all the trade capital that they had to give up, which the Seahawks, good for them. They made that decision. You also got to pay the man. And so that's one of the reasons he's not in New York. And so, being up there against it with what's happening in the cap due to the pandemic, it just wasn't a reality for us.
So John Lynch basically saying we did not have the cap space to make that work. How do you grade his assessment of Jamal Adams?
It's very accurate. It's a B because, that's why I think they've had very little movement and very little interest in being able to do it, because they're so strapped against the cap next year. I mean, their top three cornerbacks, including Richard Sherman's up. They got George Kittle, who they're struggling to get some kind of a deal with. They got over 20 free agents that are going to be up there. And so there's going to have to be some concessions for the $175 million cap. So I give him a B+.
Yeah, I think it's a very fair assessment that John Lynch gave as to why they didn't go for Jamal Adams. They just didn't have enough capital. They didn't have enough cap space either to make it work. And so Jamal Adams now a Seahawk, and hopefully a Seahawk for many years to come.
Yep.
That
again,
is it for the report card, John.
All right. Be sure to check out the professor's notes at 710sports.com. The professor's notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. Coming up next, we are going to take your text questions on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line at 710-710. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It is time to take your text questions on the Visi Hard Seltzer text line. Text is at 710-710. So, Curtis, what do we have?
John from the 360. They want to know what is taking the NFL so long on deciding Josh Gordon status.
I think it's a matter that, you need a certain, I don't know how many tests in a row that you need to take to be able to pass. And so I think what ended up happening is that in July, it was hard for the testers to be able to get to Josh, even though he was here in Seattle. And so I think it's just a matter that the delay seems to be, can he get his number of tests right? And then once they find that out and they have their conversation with the league, then I think he's going to be reinstated.
How much do you think all the COVID shutdowns are factoring into the slow process here with Josh Gordon?
Yeah, I think a lot. Because, if you can't get tested, and of course, if the issue has been his test, both on PED and substance, you've got to make sure there's a good amount of work. And normally, it was like three times you would need to be tested if you're going to be five times a month, whatever, three times a week, I think you have to have it. But of course, that's not going to be the case because, so many areas just couldn't be able to get it. So I think it's just the number of tests. And then once he passes a test, then I think he'll be okay.
509 wants to know any updates on Vic Beasley and his whereabouts.
No. In fact, I know they just asked John Robinson, and he said last Friday they had a conversation with John Robinson, the general manager, and John said, yep, I'll be in, but of course he's not in yet. So that holdout continues, and of course it's not, he's already got a contract, 1 year, 9.5, but he's losing $40,000 a day.
From the 253. They want to know what kind of production do you expect from second round pick Darrell Taylor?
I think a lot. I mean, they think that he can come in and make an impact as a rookie. And he'll compete for the starting job. Certainly don't think he's going to win the starting job, but he could. But I think there's great expectations for him.
This one is from the 253. They want to know what chances do you give John Ursua to make the 53-man roster?
I think he has a shot. I mean, I think a lot of it depends on, Josh Gordon and that, because, if they get Josh Gordon in, that could jeopardize David Moore, because David Moore has that $2.133 million base salary. And so you figure that Gordon's going to be pretty close to the minimum or all that stuff. And so if that's going to be the case, if Moore's not here, because now you have Gordon to fill in, because I think they're only going to keep five receivers this year. But, in the end, I think that, you can look at it and say, all right, I think he does have a chance. But again, he'll be that last receiver spot.
509 wants to know, is Mike McCarthy the coach the Cowboys needed, and will he finally get them over the hump?
He's the coach they've needed, but of course, to get over the hump, sometimes you have to get over Jerry Jones, because Jerry Jones, can tend to make a few mistakes that cost him the chance to get over the top. I mean, the big mistake that he made this year was not getting a deal done with Dak Prescott, because, the cap's going to be really tight next year, and certainly they got a great team, but if they, put the franchise tag on Dak, then they only have like about $30 million, $40 million bucks for the rest of the team, and they're going to have to let some guys go, maybe let Amari Cooper go, maybe have to let the right tackle, or Lil Collins, go. So in the end, I think that, Mike's the right coach. It's just that Jerry has to find a way to not make the mistakes that keep holding them back.
253 wants to know, where does DJ Dallas fit in on the Seahawks after they acquired Carlos Hyde?
I mean, right now, backup running back, and, maybe the chance to go out there and play some third down, some passing downs. He'll be competing for that spot. But, right now it puts him, technically, as the fourth running back. I mean, he'll maybe number three when you start thinking about, the fact that Rashad Penny's going to be on the PUP list most likely. And so he's, competing for number three and number four.
425 wants to know, John, what do you make of Bruce Arians committing to Ronald Jones as Tampa Bay's starting running back today?
Makes sense. I mean, LeSean McCoy can come in there and help, and they can get a little bit of a 1-2 punch, with McCoy. But, you have the good young running back, and, he certainly, when you start to look at some of the ratings in that, Tampa, because of Ronald Jones, is ranked in the bottom quadrant of backfields. And so now they needed somebody else to get a little bit more competition, but I think it's the right thing to do.
253 wants to know, John, can Russell Wilson lead the NFL in touchdown passes this year?
He could, yeah. I think that there is a possibility because DK Metcalf's going to be better. You can see that you know, they get Josh Gordon, and you know, it's a good group. They've got, you know, great tight end, particularly with Will Disley passing the physical and being there. Yeah, I think he has a chance to, you know, throw 35, 36 touchdown passes.
253 wants to know, how many sacks do you think Montez Sweat and Chase Young will combine for this season on the Washington football team?
Right now I'm going to be modest and say 15, you know, because, again, their team isn't all that good, and a lot of times to get the sacks, you have to make sure that you get the ability to have the lead, and I don't know how many leads they're going to have this year. So I'd say maybe a combined 15.
It's pretty rare for rookies to even get double-digit sacks. I think Javon Kearse still holds the rookie record, right, with like 12?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's still tough for rookies to get to the quarterback as much as they did in college. From the 907, they want to know, John, if Aaron Rodgers does leave the Packers in 2 years, what is a likely landing spot for him?
You know, what I'm thinking is going to be probably, you know, an NFC team, because, you know, you're going to have, oh, and it could be, you know, Pittsburgh or something like that, but it's going to be, you know, you have all these quarterbacks in 1 or 2 year situations. You know, Phillip Rivers on a 1 year deal, but you figure he may get a contract extension next year if they make the playoffs. You know, Brady's going to be gone in 2 years, I think. I mean, even though he may want to play more, but I think that's a 2 year thing. You know, Drew Brees, you know, he's going to possibly be up next year, even though he's on a 2 year contract. So you start to look around at those 2 year situations, and they still have enough talent to win, because, you know, I mean, he's not going to want to go, not that he has a choice, but he doesn't want to go to a losing team. He wants to go to a winning team, and a winning team he can, you know, help maybe get to the Super Bowl.
From the 206, John, they want to know, do you think Dan Quinn survives the 2020 season with Atlanta?
He survives it, but I don't know if he's going to be able to stay with it, because, you know, he'll get the whole season to be able to do it, just like he did last year, and he started picking up in the second half of the season. But if he doesn't make the playoffs, I think he's in trouble.
Yeah, he was very much on the hot seat last year. They had such a slow start, but then won a bunch of games at the end of the season. It'll be interesting to watch how he goes about it in 2020. From the 360, John, they want to know, you think Cincinnati will be able to get an extension for running back Joe Mixon?
No, I don't think so. I think it's going to be very difficult, because actually, if you're Joe Mixon, you're thinking you're worth more than $10 million, and you're simply not going to get it. Because again, you know, with the depressed market next year and the fact you have 10 running backs from 2017 up, you know, most of those guys are going to get franchised. My guess, particularly if the cap's going to be 175, the franchise number for running backs, which was 10.2 this year, may drop all the way down under 8, and my guess he gets franchise next year.
The 503 wants to know, John, do you think Delanie Walker is done playing in the NFL?
No, I mean, there seems to be interest in him, and he definitely has interest in playing, so I don't think he's done. I know he's 35 years old, but I think he still thinks there's some football left for him.
The 509 wants to know, John, is 2020 a make or break season for Baker Mayfield?
Yes, no question about it, because they've got to start deciding, okay, you've got a new general manager, and if he's not going to be, you know, doing things, and, you know, this team is talented right now, talented enough that it should be able to make the playoffs and be a wild card, and if he can't do it, then I think he's going to be, you know, under the gun. So, no, he's definitely on the hot seat.
And then finally, from the 425, John, we've talked about linebackers on the Seahawks a lot today. They want to know, do you think Ben Berkervin has a spot on Seattle's roster in 2020?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because, again, special teams, and, you know, you can see maybe there's going to be a little bit of separation as far as, you know, you want all your good young players to be on special teams. So I think he's going to make it. Again, you know, you can look at it in a sense that, you know, they have, if you include Bruce Irvin, as 7 linebackers, but also, you know, Irvin also has got a spot at defensive end. So if you can keep 16 guys on the defensive line and at linebacker, I think you're fine. So I think he makes it. Again, it's going to be, and he's more the inside guy than, you know, Shaquem Griffin. You know, Shaquem's more the outside guy, and there's more outside guys and inside guys, even though you can take Jonathan Brooks and have him play all 3 positions. But I think in the end that, you know, he should be able to make it.
That will do it for today's text question.
Okay, coming up is our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, time for our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. And so, Dave, I guess we've now reached a new highlight in baseball, because they had to delay a game because it was a drone flown by a fan flying around in that game, and they had to clear that out. It's like baseball is like its own worst enemy as far as not being able to figure out, you know, how to have things secure.
Well, I mean, let's cut them a little slack on this one, John. It's the first time for everything, and this was the first time for that. It's not going to surprise me if it happens again, especially with no one in the stands. But I'm not going to put the onus on baseball for that one.
Yeah, I do. It's just that it seems like every day there's something. But I guess the big thing is that they've got to make sure that they keep things safe, and I guess, drone is now a new thing to have to kind of wonder about as far as the protocol.
I guess. And I mean, it's just a matter of not having the security looking for something like that. And I guess now that you probably will, but, I'm not sure. What stadium was that in?
What stadium, Curtis, was that in? Was that in the Pittsburgh game or? Yeah, not sure which one it was in, but it's like it's just you got to.
It's their specific problem. It's not a baseball problem.
Yeah, that's true. That's a local problem. That's true. So now the one local problem that's going right now is that Mariners are on a 4-game losing streak and have dropped all the way down to 4-8.
Yeah, last night it was just you shake your head that Mike Trout, who'd been out, and we were wondering yesterday if he was coming back, and this turns out to be the game he's coming back to, and he's done it against everyone, but the Mariners in particular, and just, four pitches, and he looks just like the guy I always looked like. I'll credit the young Mr. Dunn, who then gave up a big home run to Albert and looked like he was going to get blown out of there and really settle down. I mean, I think that the positive was that Dunn didn't look rattled after he had that rough first inning. He settled down, worked a couple of strong innings after that, so there was a little bit of light, but the Mariners are going to lose more than they're going to win. They're not going to be a good team this year. This much we know. We're still looking for individual performances and trying to highlight them. And I think even though it wasn't a particularly good pitching performance by Dunn, that's the sort of thing that you like to see, a guy who can – and you got to be able to do that. I mean, shrug off some early problems and pitch well. I mean, it's kind of a funny thing when it comes to great pitchers. Almost universally, and we saw it with Felix Hernandez specifically here, but it's almost universally true – the time that they're vulnerable is in the first inning, and that's always been true for some reason. And then they settle down, and that was maybe that's a sign that Dunn is going to be on his way to being an elite pitcher. But I thought for a young guy to have a rough first inning like that to settle down was a good sign.
Yeah, no doubt. And so then after this series, and of course it's going to conclude tomorrow with an afternoon game, is that they got Colorado, so they start getting some of those National League teams coming in.
Not like it used to be, though. I mean, of course, the National League has got the DH, so they've been playing with it, Colorado, for a while. So it's a little bit of a different feel. And again, the bigger story for baseball is holding its breath and hoping there aren't more players testing positive. I saw where the NBA emphasizing how smart that bubble idea is, spotless coronavirus testing streak, doing what they're doing there. And that may be a blueprint for some of the other winter sports, in particular college basketball, to consider following if they can, although it's obviously a lot different when you've got 22 teams playing in that little NBA tournament versus 300 or so college basketball teams. But the idea of having a bubble and working out from there is something that seems to be working well during this period.
Yeah. How do you think the, so far we're up to about 92 positive tests, and of those 92 positive tests in the National Football League, 41 of the players have come back. I thought that tests are still coming back. Guys are still doing it, but it looks like they're going to come under the 140 that I was anticipating.
We'll see. I mean, as well as I do, John, making predictions on that stuff is a fool's errand. I mean, it's impossible to predict how it's going to go. And then, what it's going to be like now that they're in training camps and I think the Saints did a smart thing by kind of quarantining or bubbling the guys in their hotel. We'll see what it looks like as training camp goes on. But, you've still got NFL players, including Russell Wilson, expressing concerns about protocols and things like that. So I wouldn't count my chickens too fast on that one, but it certainly doesn't look bad in the early going.
No, it really doesn't. And so they start to proceed and go ahead and try to make sure that they're going to be as safe as possible. But, yeah, it's kind of gone pretty smooth. The Seahawks so far, knock on wood for them, is that, you know, no positive test. The one thing that, Kansas City, I talked to them yesterday, and they've had no positive tests.
That's, number one, you got to anticipate you're going to get some. So I think that, it's how you handle it is going to be the key for guys, especially since, again, you're not in a bubble. So how you proceed when you have the positive test is how it's going to be told. And then, the nature of it, that's the thing that is so easy to criticize about baseball is you're finding out it's guys going to casinos or doing stupid things that is kind of, led to those guys getting their cases there. And if guys can stick to the quote-unquote protocols and make the right decisions, you're going to be able to withstand having some tests come back positive because it's probably not realistic to expect that they won't.
Yeah, well, that's the one thing I think that what you can see is that, at least the fact that football is the last of the sports to really get in here to play, they can learn from the mistakes of other sports and all that and be, gain more knowledge and try to handle it. And the one thing that they do have is that they've got the 16-player practice squad, and six of those players, they can be of any age. There's no age limit and no experience limit to that. So you can actually have, six potential guys to fill in if you need them.
Yeah, they're in position to have things go their way if again it's, and of course it's the biggest challenge in the NFL because of the sheer numbers that you're talking about. They dwarf all the other sports and what they're trying to do. It's not even close. So it's just controlling the reaction, I think, is going to be the important thing and keeping things under control. But no doubt as training camp goes on, there's going to be stories of positive tests, and we'll just see how they come and what they come from.
What's your thoughts on the Big Ten deciding that they're going to start their season on September 3rd and have 12 Big Ten conference games?
A little bit of a surprise. There was some speculation that they were going to make a different decision. They're kind of I think it's logical to say that they're the first domino. So it bodes well for the other conferences that want to play. Now, there's the underlying stories of player concerns and some bad stories like the one out of Colorado State. That need to be pursued and whatnot. But I think for those who want to see college football in the fall, it was a positive news for them. At this point, that's the plan, and we'll see if that continues. It's to me, it's still very much up in the air, and I confess that I will be surprised if college football does go forward. But for those who want it to go forward, obviously good news from the Pac-12.
Yeah, but I do think there might be a team or two in the Big Ten or maybe a team or two in the Big 12 that may decide that they don't want to do anything. That wouldn't surprise me, but I think it's all go right now, particularly SEC, ACC.
Well, UConn was the first, team in one of those conferences to do that. So I agree with you that there will be those that pull out, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's the thing. Connecticut was they turned independent because they're one of the seven independent schools, and so they were going to have trouble scheduling games, and they just felt it's pretty much not worth it. Let's hold it off.
Agreed, yeah. Hey, John, I want to spend just a second throwing a shout-out to the family of Pat O'Day, who I know you knew and was really the original legendary Seattle broadcaster in town as a DJ. He's the guy who founded Concert Promotion, discovered Jimi Hendrix, among others, and for years and years and years was the voice of the major sport here in the summer. People don't remember it. Some do, but a lot don't. When the Hydros were king and Pat O'Day was the one calling those races, he was literally one of the greatest broadcasters to ever walk the face of the earth and is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for that reason. He passed away yesterday at the age of 85, so just the very best to his family and to a lot of people out there who knew him. Things have certainly changed because he was one in a million and a huge contributor to life here in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, yeah, one of the all-time greats. And I knew him. We both knew him. And he was just an absolute prize. And so, yeah, it's sad to see on his passing. Hey, that's our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. David, thank you.
Thanks, John. We'll talk tomorrow.
All right, sounds good. We'll be back tomorrow at 10. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.